afternoon and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Happy Father's Day to all you dads out there that are doing the dad thing. I'm doing it today. I've got my daughter Taylor in the studio with me.
Hey, everybody.
We've had a good day. We got up early this morning and, early, six-ish. And went down to Mr. Rivers in Anderson, South Carolina, had breakfast with a friend of ours, Neil Paul from Visit Anderson. Pretty good breakfast.
Oh, my goodness, yes. It was so good.
Then went to stop by Grady's. One of my reels went rogue on me and gave me a big old bird nest the other day, so I had to get that re-spooled. And then we went and spent a little time looking at some deer habitat with Ron Fleming and some guys from the Foothills branch of the Quality Deer Management Association, which, just for your info, I'm not a member. You know, I had so many memberships, I've let them all drop, every one of them, and I've got to go back to and figure out which ones I can be. I don't have time to read all those magazines. Sorry. I just don't have time to keep up with it all. But we had a good time. What you going to do when we get home?
I'm going to go to sleep. I don't know about y'all, but I'm going to sleep.
Poor thing, just can't take these early mornings. But you got a big week coming up next week.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
And we'll talk about it. What have you got going on Friday?
Well, I'm leaving for World in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina for the NASP tournament.
NASP being what?
National Archery in Schools.
And you're kind of a veteran now.
I mean, veteran.
This is your first year of actually competing, mm-hmm. but you've been through regionals, states, nationals in Louisville, Kentucky, and now you're headed to Worlds. Worlds is actually in South Carolina this year, which is pretty unusual. But excited?
I'm counting on the days.
How are you going to shoot?
I'm hoping my best. If it's not good, I did my best anyways.
What kind of score are you looking for?
Well, I don't know. I'm not setting any goals, whatever it is.
Well, wait a minute now. You got to have goals.
My goal is to shoot my best.
Okay. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear you stick to what you say you're going to do. So that's good. Anyway, it's like I said, this is Woods and Water, South Carolina. You're listening to 94.5 The Answer in Greenville, South Carolina. Want to welcome a lot of listeners who I appreciate. I appreciate all the questions we got. You know, we've got some new deer legislation here in South Carolina. I went on some Facebook pages and all, asked for some questions, got some good questions. Charles Ruth is going to be here with us shortly, if he remembers. and we're going to talk about those regulations a little bit more. There's some, I don't know, there's a lot of he said out there, and there's a lot of, I think, and hopefully we're going to clear a little bit of that up. And you know, look, this is not a please-all scenario. We were talking this morning. You know, not everybody is happy with this, but we have to start somewhere. And you know, people automatically jump to the, well, we don't need to kill 17 deer. Well, okay, don't. You know, the ability is there. You have enough tags. All boils down to is when it's in your sights whether you're going to pull the trigger and obey the law or not. And, you know, most people I talk to, 3, 4, 5 deer a year. If you got 17 tags, you want to kill them, go ahead. But we had to start somewhere. And then, speaking of starting somewhere, I'm not going to make him hold on any longer. I want to welcome Charles Ruth, who is the head of the Deer and Turkey Projects in South Carolina for the Department of Natural Resources. Back to Woods and Water again. Charles, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Roger. Good to be back on your show, bud.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking a little time and joining us here. Success? I mean, we have a signed bill. We have from your standpoint, I guess we have a tagging system, which is what DNR wanted, and we have a statewide limit on bucks. So, overall, you happy with what you got?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long haul, and I think the majority of hunters out there wanted this, no doubt. We would have never pursued it.
Okay.
I think we've all seen changes in our deer population in the last 10 or 15 years. We need to be a little more proactive and so forth. So, yeah. Now we got to get to work and from an administrative standpoint and get this tagging thing right and, you know, move ahead into the future.
Good place to start. Why do we need a tagging system?
Well, you know, hunters, you know, again, hunters started this process with us, over 10 years ago wanting a statewide, you know, a solid limit on buck deer.
Okay.
And when you go down that road, the next thing hunters say is, oh, by the way, we want this to be enforceable.
Right.
We don't want this limit just up in the air. So that gets you completely into the discussion about tagging.
Okay.
Tagging will be the primary enforcement tool. If that deer is not tagged before it's moved from the point of kill, it's an illegal deer. And as part of that whole process, we wanted all deer tagged, which gets you into these doe tags and so forth. So it's just the enforcement tool, and it's what hunters wanted.
And when we speak of enforcement, you know, most people think, oh, we got to hire more DNR officers to go around and pull people over or be sitting at the ends of game management land, roads, and stuff like that. But the truth of the matter is, any law enforcement officer across South Carolina can enforce this tag system, can't they?
Sure. And any sportsman can call in as well. And as far as more officers, you know, that would be up largely to the legislature. You know, we can't just all of a sudden start hiring people because we have to be given positions.
Okay.
But I think for those that have been involved in this process, particularly in these public hearings that we had, that was a big issue. More officers, the legislators that were involved in the process, they heard hunters. And so it'll ultimately be, you know, up to them granting those positions. You know, they'll say in a given year, well, we're going to let you hire 12 officers, and that'll be a class. And I'll be honest with you, Roger, you know, we got way down with officers back when all the budget stuff was so bad, you know, 6-8 years ago. But we aren't completely back to where we were, say, 10 years ago when we were kind of at the maximum ever.
Okay.
But we're getting a lot closer. It's never going to be a case where officers are that you're going to have 8 or 10 officers per county. That's just not going to happen.
Okay.
You know, it's not going to be like the highway patrol where you've got these guys, maybe 15 per county. It's just not going to happen with wildlife.
What is, do you have any idea what the average is per county on law enforcement side?
Well, along the coast, because you got marine and you got water stuff, there can be, you know, 4 or 5, but generally on the inland counties, particularly in these rural counties, 3 to 4.
Okay.
Some may only have 2 right now. And when you get in, you know, with an interface with a lot of folks, for example, Greenville County's got a lot going on, not just wildlife. There's a lot of people to deal with.
Right.
So you would tend to have an extra officer or 2, you know, that type of thing. But generally, I'd say if you average it out, 3 to 4.
Okay. Let me step back just a second, Charles, and ask you a question. The relationship Department of Natural Resources has with the legislature. Can you take a couple minutes and just go through, because there are a lot of people out there that say DNR has all the control, and then a lot of us know that it's really the legislature that has most of the control. What's the relationship, and what does that, the department, you just can't blanket say what you're going to do. It all has to go through the legislature, correct?
Exactly. Unlike most states, Roger, in which the Fish and Game Agency has been granted generally large authority, regulatory authority, to do what they think they need to do, South Carolina's a little different. Our function generally is just in making recommendations.
Okay.
So, you know, we would make a recommendation, the legislature would, you know, mull it over and decide whether it's something that they're interested in, and then you go through that legislative process, you know, like we just did the last couple of years here with this deer bill. So it's a little different than a lot of states. That doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean it's good. It's just different.
Okay. So it's
but,
not,
you know, right now, you know, right now our relationship with the legislature is pretty doggone good. You know, our director, Alvin Taylor, has done a lot, you know, under his tenure to mend some bridges that had, you know, fallen in and so forth. So it's pretty good. And I'll be honest with you, the process that we went through with this deer bill, it may not suit everybody, the outcome of it, but it was a good process. It really was. We sat down man on man and talked with these legislators, the ones that are hunters, and kind of navigated to get something that we could deal with and make a deal with, and here we are.
Should make it easier on anything upcoming y'all want to do.
I hope so. You know, it's not good when we're at odds and so forth.
Right. But I know the misconception, a lot of people think that, you know, y'all can set what you want whenever you want to.
No.
It's not. That lies with the legislature.
That's correct. You know, on WMA land, on public land, we do have regulatory authority to, you know, if we need to change a season or a bag limit, you know, in game zone two on the Forest Service land, we have the authority to do that. Now, that is done by a regulation that ultimately has to be approved by the legislature, but they aren't nearly as involved in that.
Okay.
So, but generally on private land for all game species, we make recommendations, and either it happens or it doesn't happen. That's, you know, if for your listeners, that's why things haven't changed a whole lot in history. It's a tough road to hoe.
And that harkens back to the upstate Lowcountry way of doing things.
Yeah, and there's the upstate low state diversity or differences. A lot of that has to do with, in the case of deer, is the history of the deer population.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there weren't any deer 50, 60 years ago in the upstate, and there were always deer in some parts of the coastal plain, and there was always some deer hunting going on, even before there was a wildlife department. And some of the weird laws were set up then without looking at biology or common sense, in my opinion.
Okay.
And we know when to hunt and kill deer, and that's October and November.
That's
so,
right.
But anyway.
I started thinking about that, you know, with the Zika thing out and the mosquitoes and all, I'm starting to rethink those early season hunts down in the low country. They're bad enough already.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, well, I kind of, like I said, I went to some Facebook groups and told people, look, you know, Charles is going to be on the show. You know, what are your summary questions? Of course, there were some that, you know, I just off the cuff, not going to handle. But there were some good ones. And I'd like to get to a few of those. And if you'll answer them for me, I sure would appreciate. One of the ones is, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
That's okay. Go ahead.
One of them I had is probably a pretty simple one. If I shoot an 8-point buck under 12-inch spread, have I broken the law?
No. Every hunter that has a big game permit is going to be issued free of charge 3 antlered buck tags. Those are wild card tags. They can shoot any buck they want to. Now, if they want additional opportunity, then they can get the 2 antler restriction tags, and they would have to be, you know, at least 4-point on one side or 12-inch inside spread. So the answer, I guess, is yes and no. If you still got a wild card tag, no harm, no foul.
Right.
If you don't, then, you know, there could be a problem.
Okay. And I think that's what they were referring to, is those 2 extra point restricted tags. And that's just 4 on 1 or 12 inches. So I guess it'd be okay. A lot of confusion about the doe tags and the dates and all that. Take us through, it's almost a 6 1/2 and a dozen the other compared to what we have now. Take us through the dated doe tags, would you?
Yeah, I will. And I tell people when they hear about it or read about it, they kind of got to take a step back, take a deep breath, because when you look at where we'll be, the new strategy for does is exactly like it was, okay? Hunters with that big game permit are going to be issued 8 antlerless tags, doe tags. But those 8 tags will be specifically dated for the same 8 doe days that we've had the last 2 or 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
So if you kill a doe on that Saturday, you've got to use the tag dated for that Saturday. In other words, if October 4th is a doe day, you kill a doe, you've got to use that October 4th tag. If it's October 5th, that tag's useless.
Okay.
So again, there's no change there. We've had those 8 doe days. We're just giving you a tag to put on the deer for enforcement.
Okay. What do you say?
Then you can still get your same personal tags up to 4.
Okay.
Just like you have for the last 25 years.
Okay.
That represents no change.
Okay.
So in both cases, other than having a free tag for the doe days, there's no change.
So that was my next question was, how many of those, is it going to be 4 additional doe tags available for purchase?
Yes. Now, we do have the flexibility to manipulate that. But here initially, we're going to keep it just the way it has been because people are used to it.
Okay.
Keep in mind that in the mountains in Game Zone 1, you can only use one of those tags. And that was the case last year for the first time in years. You couldn't in the past, you couldn't use any of the extra tags in the mountains.
Okay.
And, when I was on hold before I came on the program, Roger, I heard y'all talking about 17 deer and all that. That's not the case. you know, there will still, just like there is now.
Okay.
Okay, if you look last year, there was 8 doe days.
Right.
You had 4 tags. That's 12. But what was the limit? You could only take 5 during the gun season.
Okay.
Remember, you could only take 2 during the bow season. So you got to differentiate between opportunity and limits. There will still be a cap on the number of antlerless deer in the upstate that can be taken. And it's not 12 or 17 or whatever the number of tags is.
Okay.
Well, and again, that represents no change.
Okay. So we're really going to have to, when those new regulation books come out in, June of 17, really need to educate yourselves on what the limit is as opposed to how many tags you just got in the mail with the new license.
That's right. You know, here's what to think about. If you go back 10 or 15 years, we had 20 or 22 doe days, but you still had a maximum number of does you could kill during the gun season, and it was 5.
Okay.
Okay, so none of this has changed. People kind of, like I said, you got to look
and see
exactly what it does.
Okay.
And this is, you know, from a doe standpoint, other than getting a free tag to use on the doe day, this is all status quo.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that clears that for me, because that I was thinking, well, you got 8 tags and you can buy additional 4, that's 12, and then $3. But you still got the limits, at least in this part, for total deer.
That's
for
right.
The year. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Question
and
somebody asked.
And, you know, along those lines, we will work with, you know, there were some House members, some representatives in the upstate that were real interested in all this, and we're going to go back and work with them on, you know, what the maximum limit, even though you've got all these tags, what the maximum limit should be. And, you know, what we talked about, if my recollection was correct, is 7. Keep in mind that last season you could take up to 2 during the archery season.
Right.
2 during the muzzleloader season and up to 5 during the gun season. That's 9 right there.
Okay.
So it may or may not be 9 as we move in with these tags. But the message is, yeah, you may have the ability to have a dozen antlerless tags, but there's going to be a limit in there somewhere.
Okay. Well, that probably clears up a lot for a lot of people who are saying, we don't need to kill 17 deer if we're worried about our deer population.
Right, right, right.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad. I'll have to go back and find out who sent me that question and thank them. That was a good one. All right, here's a good one for you. You're a number cruncher. How do you come up with the number of deer in South Carolina? How do you estimate the herd number?
Yeah, we use and have been using for many years an annual post-season, you know, following the deer season,
okay,
random survey of hunters.
Okay.
It's a statistically-based survey. Last year, I surveyed 30,000 people. I sent forms to 30,000 people. You know, you get about 25 or 30% of them back. But that's still 6 or 8,000 responses. And I know a lot of the hunters are listening. You've had one survey that asks you, number one, did you hunt deer? Then it asks you, did you kill a deer? And then it asks you to fill in a little chart about how many days you hunted in certain counties and how many bucks and does you killed in certain counties. Then some other questions about weapons use. But when you get those thousands and thousands of responses, you've got a lot of power, and you can extrapolate as if you talk to everybody. It's simply statistical procedure is all it is. Now, what I'll tell you, Roger, a lot of hunters don't understand it.
No.
I'm not sure why, but, and I tell folks that if there's any one person that has to have confidence in those numbers, it's me.
Right.
And I do. Something else I'll tell you is the numbers that I generate may or may not be exactly right, but they're close. But what is more important is doing this survey consistently.
Right.
Because that's, if it's wrong, it's always wrong the same way. That way you get this trend, and that's what's important.
And we talked about that in your office one day. You know, if you do it year after year after year, you have ups and downs in interim years, but you get a 10-year trend, and you know your numbers are pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is pretty accurate. You know, for example, last 2015, the estimate came in like at 195,000 deer. And the 95% confidence limits on that estimate was plus or minus 3,000 or 4,000 in one direction or another. That's pretty tight. I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And again, this same technique when I did it 15 years ago was estimating a harvest closer to 300,000. So it is over time documented this decline in harvest that we've seen in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years.
Okay.
Same procedure.
Okay. And the outliers, the rogues, if you want to call them that, there are some out there, there always have been, there always will be, are not going to have a large enough effect on the population to skew those numbers.
Yeah, and again, you know, when we talked about, you know, when hunters came to us saying, look, we think there's a small percentage of hunters that are taking advantage of our lack system and killing a lot of deer, the first thing I started doing was looking at the numbers. And hunters were exactly right. And you and I have talked about this. If you look over the last 15 years, on the average, you've got about 7% of hunters statewide that kill more than 4 bucks a year. Small percentage, but as a group, they kill 30% of all the bucks every year. And that's exactly what got this thing started, was hunters coming to us and saying, look, I got a good hunting club. We got 2,000 acres. We're trying to do the right thing. We're fairly easy on the bucks, trying to increase age structure, get better sex ratios, and we got neighbors that are just whacking them, and we're getting no results. And that's largely what brought all this along.
I got you. One of the biggest things, and I think you kind of put that to rest with the opportunity and the number of tags versus the thing, is this a money-making scheme for DNR. And
okay,
I know.
Well, let's look what we just talked about.
Go ahead.
Hunters are going to be able to hunt. They're going to get free tags. They hunt deer. But, you know, the only money part is if they want the same additional opportunity to buy the doe tags that they've had, or if they want these extra two bucks. And those $2, any revenue generated from those two new buck tags, those antler restriction tags, has to go into a coyote management program.
Okay.
You know, that's another thing that hunters are all lathered up about is coyotes. So, again, take a step back. You're going to get all these tags free. Oh, if you want your extra doe tags, just like always, you can get them. So that hasn't changed.
Same price, $5 a piece.
That's right. Same thing.
All right. We got about 2 minutes left. Take a minute and quickly explain the deer quota program and how that works. Upstate guys, you know, we're kind of scratching our heads going, I don't know about that. And talk about that.
What we're talking about is historically been called the antlerless deer quota program. That program has been in existence since 1965.
Okay.
It's a land-based program in which a landowner or club, whatever it may be, can apply. There's a $50 application fee. Doesn't have anything to do with how many tags you get. You enroll your property. Our staff makes a recommendation on how many doe tags to issue the property based on a number of things. One of the most important, obviously, being how big is the property.
Okay.
All right. That program, Roger, will become the deer quota program. These cooperating or participating properties will have the decision to make, do I want a quota for does, or do I want a quota for bucks and does?
Okay.
It'll be their decision. Now, historically, that program has been much more well-received and participated in the coastal plain.
Okay.
And I think that has everything to do with there's just so many more larger tracts down there.
Okay.
I mean, you got lots and lots. The average property in this program is 2,000 acres.
All right.
And you just don't have that many 2,000-acre tracts in upstate.
No.
So what I would tell you is out of 1,600 properties in the program, there's probably only 100 to 150 in all of the upstate.
Okay.
It's just not as popular.
Okay. Charles, I appreciate you taking time on your Saturday to be here. Hope you've answered some questions. If you would, text me what kids under 16 are supposed to do so I can read it in the next segment.
They simply request the tag.
Okay. There you go.
Yep,
thanks, Charles.
Yep. Call or get online, and they'll get their tags in the mail.
Okay. Thanks, bud. And welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I didn't, in this whole deer regulation thing, think about the limits we had. So that kind of something I learned. So hope you did too. And like I said, I appreciate all the people that sent the questions in and tuned in today. Hope it helped you out. We got him on the phone finally. He's a hard man to get a hold of. He's the 2015 Bassmaster Classic from Donald, South Carolina. He's the champion, Casey Ashley. Casey, welcome back to Woods and Water.
How you doing, Robert?
I'm good. So where are you at right now?
Man, I am about 40 miles from Indianapolis.
Headed to Cayuga Lake.
Yes, sir.
And as Cayuga, is that going to be a smallmouth fishery, or is there a mix there?
That'll be a mix. The last time we was here 2 years ago, pretty well a largemouth on it. I mean, you had to catch largemouth if you had to catch a limit.
Okay.
But we were here, a month later. It was in almost August, because I remember I had to leave this tournament and drive back home to fish the Forestwood Cup on Lake Murray.
Okay.
So it was a great deal later. Everything was postponed, in the smallmouth didn't really play. It may be different now, The smallmouth may be spawning still. All the fish may be spawning, I don't know.
Okay. Have you had a chance to get up there and pre-fish, or are you just going to hit your 3 days?
Man, I get my 3 days. I hardly ever get pre-fish anywhere we go.
And that's something you've told me before. You just like to show up and fish. Now,
I do. I'm telling you, if you go somewhere, months and months ahead of time, you really don't do anything but hurt yourself, It's better off to go in with no preconceived notions and just fish for that week.
Because if, like you told me, you go 3 months, the fish are going to be doing something totally different than they are the week you're there.
They are, if you go and you fish and catch some, you're automatically going to want to do that when you go back. And that's, it'll take you a half to three quarters of a practice day to tell yourself that you don't need to be doing that, to do something different. So it's best for me, some guys are different, but for me, I'd rather just show up and not know anything and just go fishing.
That's great. You also like to fish the grind. Now, a lot of us media guys, we get, and I don't know if you guys don't hear each other when you cross the stage or whatever, but about every second or third guy, man, it's just a grind out there. In fact, I remember in 2014 at media day at the Cup on Murray, you were standing outside. I walked up to you, and the first thing out of your mouth is, "It's going to be a grind." I appreciate that a little more now, having fished a tournament myself, but the grind is, you got to keep fishing.
You do. You got to keep moving. You got to stay mentally tough, because you don't get many bites in a day. When you do get a bite, you need to make sure you get your mentally in the game to capitalize on everything that happens. For me, I would rather fish tournaments that way. Instead of fishing, the slug test where you have to catch 25 a day to win.
Right.
That's not me. I usually don't do well under those situations. I usually survive, not being winning contention, But when you go out there and it's tough, and you got to stay mentally tough throughout the whole day, to get from start to finish, you may only get 6 or 7 bites. Those are my kind of tournaments.
Well, the thing that brought that home is Brad Knight told me, he said, you got to stay in the game no matter what happens, especially as a co-angler. You're fishing kind of behind somebody who's wearing the fish out. You got to keep fishing, and that's the only way I caught my one fish was between every dock I'd throw towards the bank, and I caught that one fish that allowed me to walk to stage. And at that moment, I understand exactly what the grind meant.
Yeah, for me, it's a mental thing. And I like fishing when it's super cold and super hot. I don't really enjoy spring fishing, because everybody catches them, and then it becomes more of a luck deal. Who caught the 8-pounder? Who caught the 10-pounder? Who caught two of them? That's who's going to be up there. But with those grind tournaments, when you get 6 or 7 bites a day, that nobody's catching them.
Right.
You're not behind at any point during the day. So you stick with your guns, you stick with the presentations that you have the most confidence in, and, you know, it may take you 8 hours to get those five bites or six bites. But, you know, that's what I like. That's what I enjoy. The mental toughness part of the game.
Well, and it showed at Bass Fest. You like to show up and fish, so pre-fishing when it was flooded up the banks 6-7 feet wouldn't have done you any good. You had to wait for those bites to come along, and I watched a lot of it on Bassmaster Live. Great tournament for you. Take us through a little bit of what went on those 4 days.
Yeah, that was a good tournament, and it was a unique situation, you know, to show up. Never seen a lake before. I have no knowledge whatsoever about it. The only knowledge I had at that time was just talking to Jeff Creek, which is a competitor. You know, he lives there. That's his home lake.
Right.
You know, so everything I knew about it, you know, was what I'd heard from him. But, you know, showing up and it being 10 feet high, you know, that's right up my alley. I fish shallow, visible target, put your head down, find an area that's got some fish in it, and drop out. But, you know, it got better, actually, as the week went on, because during practice, we were faced with, you know, rising water. I mean, it was coming up a foot to a foot and a half a day. And that's the hardest time in the world to get to, especially when the water's rising.
You know, that was a little bit of a different tournament. You know, the normal Elite Series is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This Bass Fest was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You were holding court talking about fishing the shad spawn and all. And then you got to fish the fourth day, a day removed. How much, because by that time the water was really coming out, they were letting the water out and it was dropping. How much did that hurt you on that final day, not being able to fish the day before?
Not really that much. I mean, the thing that hurt me on the final day was it was really cloudy, drizzling rain, super overcast. You know, the fish stayed scattered all day, and I couldn't find a moving bait that I could catch them on, and they just didn't pull to the bushes so you could flip them like I've been doing. That was the only thing that really hurt me.
Okay. There was a lot of people posting videos of, you know, Gerald Swindle was dunking a basketball from his boat and all. What was the, and Andy Montgomery was flipping a public restroom facility. What was the funniest thing you flipped to or fished during that tournament?
A telephone pole with a live wire. I'm telling you, there's a lot of stuff in the water. I mean, there was some point that had all you could see were the tops of these deals, like rooftops.
Yeah.
It looked like, you know, look like goat boxes. You know how you ride down the road and people's got these little boxes built for the goats, and they'll be standing on top of them, or they'll stand on them for shade when it's hot.
Right.
So, but I never figured out what those were. It was too deep.
Oh, man, that was hilarious watching some of that video footage come in. And then Edwin had the snake crawl up in the boat with him.
Oh, there was plenty of them there now. I can promise you that. I mean, literally, you would put your boat up in the woods, like the only thing those trees and bushes were good for, and on a normal water level, was, you know, a bird nest. That was it.
Yeah,
I mean, we were fishing way in the woods.
Gosh. Well, I got your number one fan sitting here in the studio with me today. I know she's dying to say something to you.
What's up, Casey?
Hey, Taylor. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. You keeping your daddy straight?
Oh yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying my hardest.
I told her she's going to have the fourth segment to do by herself. She says, what am I going to do? I said, well, you should have prepped better.
Just wing it. That's the best way.
That's the best. Sometimes you're right. That's the best way, is just to wing it. Well, you're up there around the classic cut. What do you think going in the last part of the season? You think you'll make it?
That's what I'm trying. You know, we got off to a rough start at the beginning of the year. You know, Texoma kind of got me back up into the points where I can actually manage it now.
Yeah.
I've done pretty well at Cayuga the last time we were here, but, you know, like I said, I'm trying to forget about that. It's going to be a totally different deal.
Yeah.
Just go out and see what's going on right now. But I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. You know, I don't mind coming to the North Country just as long as we don't go to those big lakes.
Okay. Those 6 and 7 foot roller waves, lakes.
Yeah, I'm out on that where you got to go out and just drift with a drop shot and catch smallmouth like you catch fishing.
Right.
I'm out on that.
Okay. Well, you know, probably the most important question of the day is, did you get your dove field planted this year?
The dove field is planted. I had not one thing to do with it because I was traveling the whole time while they got it planted. But it's up. It's growing pretty good. I've got a few pictures of it, you know, but I'm ready. I'm ready. What about you? You get yours in the ground this year?
I got it. I was late. I think it's been in the ground about 3 weeks, and all I had time to do was some brown top millet. So I'll wait next year. I'll get some sunflower in there. But, you know, we got one in, which is more than we've done in the past probably 15 years since I had my last one. And it really feels good. I'm looking forward. Taylor, I know, is taking up shooting a 20-gauge shotgun. So we're going to see if we can't get her out there. And I know Sophie's ready to go retrieve some. So, yeah, we're looking good on our end, too.
You better buy a little extra ammo this year, because by the time you're going to have to start cleaning that shotgun, keep the little old boys run off from that pretty blue-eyed girl you got sitting beside you there.
You know, yeah, and I can't believe you'd bring that up. everybody I know when Taylor's around me, and Jordan for that matter too, is, man, I don't know how you afford all the ammunition you expend on a daily basis.
I might have to send you a case of shells up there just for that.
Yeah, all donations are appreciated. Well, look, man, I appreciate you taking time on your drive. Tell Kenzie hello for us. Good luck. We'll be keeping track of you, and let's do it again sometime soon.
I'll do it, man. I appreciate you having me. Y'all have a good one.
We'll see you, bud. Take care.
All right. Take it easy.
All right. Bye-bye. Always fun when you talk to somebody like that, Casey. He's a ball, and he does. He just likes to show up and fish, and sometimes that's the best thing to do. Hang on through the break. Be back on the other side to wrap up another show.
That God bless the broken road that led me straight to you.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's been a fun show. But, yeah, you know, a couple of things here as a dad with daughters. I don't mind going back to prison. Let's see, what was one of the other ones? I brought you into this world. I can take you out of this world. And, you know, I know where all the big alligators live. And I know I give my girls just, I don't know. They do well to tolerate me, and I appreciate that. So, anyway, that's the fun of being a dad. A couple of things. Taylor's sitting over here, cheeks red and all that. Am I tolerable?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Am I?
Mm-hmm. We try our best, me and Jordan.
Put up with me?
Yep, there are some days when you just separate yourself in the room, but we live with it. We love you anyways.
I'm a fun guy.
You are a fun guy.
I just don't like boys. If I hear a name one too many times, I start thinking about, okay, I'm going to have to get rid of this one too. Oh, me. It's good to laugh, and it's good to be a dad too at the same time. Couple of things here that I want to get to in the closing minutes of the show today, and I hope you've enjoyed it. And welcome to you listeners. It's usually this way. It's pretty quick, pretty fast, a lot of information, and have a good time with it. Academy Sports. You know, it's this PC thing. You know, you sit here and you labor under it and you put up with it and all, but you don't expect something like what this happens. You know, Walmart's done it. You kind of understand there. But Academy Sports has removed the AR-15 rifles from store displays and advertisements. This is in the wake of what happened in Orlando. And heaven knows we all, you know, can't believe what happened in Orlando. But it wasn't the gun. You know, I've got one. My gun has never assaulted anybody. In fact, it doesn't have much recoil to it either. But Academy Sports, in a move that is starting to backfire on them, I mean, their Facebook page has been lit up since this. I noticed their stock price was down. They didn't quit selling them. It'd be one thing if you wanted to make a statement and say, you know what, we're just not going to be in that market anymore, and we're just going to stop selling ARs. And when you talk about AR, it's not assault rifle. The AR stands for Armalite. Armalite is that gun. They were the first makers, Armalites. Since then, you got Colt, you know, Bushmaster. Everybody makes one. It's not Assault Rifle 15. It's Armalite 15. So, but what they did here is they didn't have the guts to do that. All they did was put them back in the back room. You can still go in there and buy one, I guess. You won't know how much it is until you ask somebody. And one of the stories I read said that if you came in and wanted to buy ammunition in bulk, and I don't know what bulk is, because at one time Academy Sports had a whiskey barrel full of AR ammunition out on the floor. I don't know how many. It was like 5,000 rounds or something like that they were selling. So I don't know what they consider bulk ammunition. But one of the stories I read was they were going to make you sign a, I don't know what you would call it, a registration sheet or something, or a list of people who are buying more than 5 or 10 boxes of ammunition. 226, 5.56. So, you know, I'm done. I like Academy Sports. I always have. The first one I went to was in Texas a long while back. And always liked the store. If there wasn't a small store to go shop at that I knew about, well, it was probably one of the first stops. I'll drive by Cabela's and Dick's and all, and to get to Academy, no more. And I think there's a lot of people who feel the same way I do out there. So if you don't know about it, go on and read it. The Wall Street Journal's got a great article about it. You know, they're not responding for comments. And, you know, when is it going to stop? Academy's problem is that hunting and fishing equipment have given them leverage in the market, and you know, along with all their sporting goods stuff. Well, let me tell you what, there's a lot of sporting goods stores that carry guns too, so we'll kind of stay tuned to see what happened to this. And then, you know, then you got this guy from the New York Daily News. I shouldn't have said guy. I was not going to reference what he was. I was just going to read the story, let you decide. A New York Daily News guy went out and shot an AR-15 just to better understand the firepower of military-style assault weapons and hopefully explain their appeal to gun lovers. He shot an AR-15, and it was hysterical. the recoil bruised my shoulder. The brass shell casings disoriented me as they flew past my face. The smell of sulfur and destruction made me sick. The explosions, loud like a bomb, gave me a temporary case of PTSD. For at least an hour after firing the gun just a few times, I was anxious and irritable. Man, I don't even know where to start with that one. He concluded the gun was horrifying, menacing, and very, very loud. I'll grant you that. It's loud. That is, that's a short barrel and fast speed and fast propellant burn. So I can, but, you know, my girls, don't give them 5 boxes of 223 ammunition, a gun, and a magazine, because it's gone.
It's true.
You like it, don't you?
I love it.
Your sister likes it more than you do.
What?
Jordan, yeah. I'd go broke if I let y'all take that thing with us every time we went. And the funny thing is, you can go on YouTube, and there's like a 5-year-old, 7-year-old girl just wearing that out. So anyway, I thought you'd. Because I can, I'm the host here, and I can do this. Hey, Mom.
Hey, Roger. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I've been eating some chicken gizzards.
Oh, yeah.
We
Y'all stopped on the way back from the farm, huh?
We did. We did. They're so good. Every now and again, you know.
Oh, yeah. Every now and again.
Yes.
I guess Dad's right there with you?
Yes, he is. Okay.
I'm sure he never expected to hear it on the radio, but I just want to call up and say Happy Father's Day.
Well, thank you. I have the radio turned down low, so if you'll say that one more time so he can hear it, okay?
You got it up?
I got it up, yeah.
All right. Hey, Dad, I know you're driving. Appreciate all you did raising us boys, and Happy Father's Day. I can hear it,
Thank
Mom.
Thank you, Roger. he's eating a good right now.
Well, I can guarantee you when he wanted to throttle me when I was about 13 or 14 years old, he'd never get a Happy Father's Day on the radio. So there's a first time for everything.
Well, he appreciates that, Roger, yeah. And we appreciate you and your radio program. And Kayla, it's nice to hear you.
Thank you.
I enjoy listening to the program. I'm probably a little biased, but...
You'd better be biased.
But I think you do a great job, Roger, and we're proud of you.
Well, thanks, ma'am. And like I said, I know Paul and I can speak for Paul, and y'all were the best parents and gave us the best childhood and education and responsibility, teaching us how to be responsible that we could have wished for. We appreciate you.
Well, you've been a joy to us, and we feel very blessed having had you and having seen you grow up and become fathers, and wish you a happy Father's Day, too.
Well, thank you very much. Well, y'all be careful coming the rest of the way home.
Thank you. We're in Spartanburg now, so we'll talk to you later then.
All right.
Thank you. Love you.
All right. Love you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so that's one of those things you can do as a host. You can call your parents on Father's Day. Now, Mom is, I think Mom will be 80 next month. Dad will be 83 in September. And, you know, I just like Taylor gives me gray hair now, I gave my parents gray hair for years and probably still, you know, Dad's totally white-headed now. has been since he was 50. Where would that put me? It's about my teenage years. So anyway, but they're, you know, take time to call your dad this weekend. I mean, yeah, I meant to ask Casey about that because he and his dad are really close and they fish a lot together. His dad made him some of those underspins to win the Classic. And, you know, it's a special relationship they've got. You know, my dad did not hunt or fish. He thought it was a colossal waste of time. But having two boys in the country, he put the word out, look, I got two boys who think they may want to do this, and he enabled us. And I think that's a lot of times I think that took more on his part than if he had been a hunter or fisherman. And I do. I appreciate every minute of every day I've spent out in the water on the field. And it's all thanks to the way they brought us up, giving us the responsibility to go out, teaching us how to handle a gun and expecting you not to make a mistake with it, you know? I did make a mistake. I put a 12-gauge slug in the back of a refrigerator in the kitchen. But that's a story for another day. Oh, kind of tired. Comes through. Thanks, Taylor.
You're welcome.
Enjoyed spending the day with you.
Me too. Happy Father's Day, Dad.
Thank you very much. Happy Father's Day, all you guys out there that are dads. Get out and spend some time with your kids in the outdoors. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget that camera. I won't be here next week. Ben Lancaster will be here. I'm going to the beach for a few days. So we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening. In my mind.